Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
As the original apothecary company in America, Castle Massey does apothecary right. And right now, their celebrated bath and body sale is going on. You can find essentials marked down up to 33%. And for you, because you're special, that's right, you're special, you get an additional 30% off by entering the code OutlanderCast at checkout.
You said he raped you of your virtue. I nearly killed the man. To think I was defending your honor. And now I come to find you claim yourself violated upon finding yourself a child.
I was violated, you self-righteous bastard! By someone else! You beat up the wrong man!
Is it true? I'm sorry, Liza.
Go to hell.
I'll make it right. You have my words, your father.
My father would never have said the things you said to me. He was a good man. Nothing but a savage.
All the way from Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to Outlander Cast. It's a podcast dedicated to the show Outlander on Stars.
Sing me a song.
How's it going? My name's Mary Larson.
My name's Blake. And, you know, I always freak out when I hear bees. Always. Like, I hate bees.
Like, in general.
Just,
okay.
Just straight up hate bees.
Yeah.
But I was actually excited this time to hear the bees.
Ooh, that caught you off guard.
It did.
I was really, really excited to see that reaction.
Was not expecting that.
Blake was sitting there going, ooh. Ooh.
That was what we're talking about.
Guys, this episode, once again, has all the feels. I mean, all of our characters are now in the thick of it. I'm not going to lie. This conflict has been slowly, you know, it's been
slow
a slow burn.
Burn.
But here we are. Here we are at episode 410, and we see all the pieces in motion right now.
Yeah, they're owning it now.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Yes.
Very
so
good.
Before we get into the show, if you're brand new here, hi. Thanks so much for joining
us.
You can actually make sure that you subscribe to this podcast. Go to your podcast player of choice. Hit that subscribe button. You can also find OutlanderCast on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, all over the place. Our handle on all of those is @OutlanderCast. And you can just find us by searching OutlanderCast. It's really easy. We also all know that the end of Outlander season is coming to an end. And you may want to hear more from us during the dreaded Droughtlander. So be sure to follow us on social media and YouTube with the handle Mary and Blake. That way you'll be up to date with all the latest and greatest during Droughtlander. Because we stay busy, my friends. We stay busy with Outlander, without Outlander, all sorts of things. You can also keep up to date on our podcast like This Is Us 2. This Is Us fans. It's coming back. And if you don't listen to that podcast yet, you're going to want to check it out. That's returning January 15th. Plus all of our blogs, events, giveaways, everything else we do at Mary and Blake Media, you can find.
And just remember, you also want to get in on the tickets for the OutlanderCast Season 4 Finale Party. Just go to OutlanderCastFinaleParty.com and you will be able to get tickets to our event that we're having at the Colony House, very generously provided to us by the Newport Historical Society. Thank you to all the people
Thank
that are
you.
There. Ruth and Nikki and all those people, they are amazing at the Newport Historical Society. And you can find, again, those tickets for the Old Colony House for our finale party at OutlanderCastFinaleParty.com. Marvin, are you ready?
Always.
Let's do it.
All right, all right, all right, as Matthew McConaughey would say.
All right, all right, all right.
Let's get into the show. Break it on down for me, the details. You liked that, huh?
I did. That was
all
good.
All right,
one.
All right, all right.
Good job. Now, here's the real test.
Yeah.
Do you know from that quote from which movie it is?
I would like to say Magic Mike, but I don't think
no.
it's that one.
Oh, man. It's one of Matthew McConaughey's best roles
ever. Which one?
In Dazed and Confused.
Oh, sorry.
You know, he's like, I only like high school girls. I keep getting older, but they keep staying the same age.
Oh, goodness. All right. Let's get into this show where people do age.
All right. Episode title. Apparently, maybe not. Episode title was The Depot's Core, which is a...
Terrible title for this episode. And if you missed the little discussion between... Tony, Matt, and Meryl.
It rivaled the carrot discussion.
Oh, most certainly. This was in the carrot discussion vein.
This was close to the carrot discussion. Essentially, this is a poem written by William Butler Yeats. And it was supposed to be used in the previous episode, as a matter of fact.
Yes.
And they edited it out. And the whole discussion was Meryl and Matt and talking with Luke Skelhas, who was the writer of this episode, being like, I want to include this. And
Tony
had
some kind of a bet with him about a stake, and somehow this ended up being. So it should have been in last week's episode.
Yes.
It should have been happening. In the book, it happens with Bree and Jamie as they're walking back from bee hunting. So it goes like this. The Lake Isle of Innisfree by William Butler Yeats. I will arise and go now and go to Innisfree, and a small cabin build there of clay and wallets made. Hopefully I said that word right. 9 bean rows will I have there, a hive for the honeybee, and live alone in the bee-loud glade. And I shall have some peace there, for peace comes dropping slow, dropping from the veils of the morning to where the cricket sings. There midnight's all a glimmer, and noon a purple glow, and evening full of the linnet's wings. I will arise and go now, for always night and day, I hear lake water lapping with low sounds by the shore. While I stand on the roadway or on the pavement's gray, I hear it in the deep heart's core.
Oh, very
so,
nice.
So, they had it. It was filmed, but they left it on the cutting room floor, and you would have gotten this. And then I guess they were just like, well, let's just name episode 10 The Deep Heart's Core, even though nobody's going to get it.
I mean, I think there's some relevance, you know, to the poem.
Yeah.
You know, and even in specifically this episode, I mean, this poem is about Yeats's like love of Ireland, you know, where he's from, and you know his missing it, and like he begs for it, and he feels it in his deep heart's core. And I guess there's relevance too, because you know Roger has this deep heart's core love for Bree and misses her, and Bree has this same thing for Roger, despite the fact that they got into a fight and their dad beat the hell out of them, and even talking Bree and Claire talking about their love of things that they miss back in their home, things that they wish that they had, that they feel in their deep, like missing Led Zeppelin, you know, like those are things that you feel in your in your deep heart's core. So I think there's relevance to it, but I still think it's a terrible episode title.
Maybe they should just not have told us that story.
Yeah, and just let us like play with it, you know, and just let us interpret it.
As I said, like book readers knew that Bree had recited it, but I don't know.
Yeah, well, whatever. So the writer was Luke Skelhas, who is one of the producers of the show, also has written Wilmington from this season. He also wrote The Bakra and Heaven and Earth. The director was David Moore, who directed The Birds and the Bees, Heaven and Earth, and also The Doldrums. And the DP was Alistair Walker. Marvin, your kilt rating, what do you got?
My kilt rating was a 5.
Get out of here. Really? It's really a 5?
Okay, fine. A 4.9.
Oh,
I'm
going to
switch it.
See, Mary didn't even write it in our Google Doc.
I didn't.
I think she was purposely hiding it from me. Don't let me pressure you. If you think it's a 5, it's a 5.
You know, it is a 5. It is a 5. I'm going back and changing it. It is a 5. And I will go into that why later. How about you? Don't pressure me, you and your negative feelings.
I never pressure. Never,
know.
ever.
I know.
I'm a 4.6er on this one.
Okay.
I liked it better than some, but this, and while this episode has...
I'm surprised you gave it a 4.6. I mean, I know that that's still really high for you,
yeah.
But I feel like the sounds that you were making while watching this episode, you, right away, you were like, you know, I just love when Bree and Jamie hang out.
I do.
I love it so
everything.
Much.
I love everything
about
it.
And then the Roger stuff.
Oh, the Roger stuff was great.
Yeah, you made a lot of, oh, ooh, ah.
But there, and as great as some of those things are, and I love them, and that's what keeps this episode up for me. I love the tension. I love that there are decisions that have to be made by mm-hmm. our characters mm-hmm. that are real, weighty, meaty decisions that have yep. consequences. But... there are familiar beats in this episode, and I think there's a lot of overwriting, and there's some confusing stuff with Jamie.
Confusing, eh?
Yeah, that like make me like be like, what? Wait, what? Like, what is this? Is this really happening? Like,
is this
Jamie? I don't really get it. And we'll get into why, but there are some things that take it down for me. And this episode, while I really did like it, it was not as good as the previous three. That have just come and gone. So I within context, I have to call it a 4.6.
Okay. All right. Time for the GBGs. The goods, the bads, the greats. So my good is how connected Bree and Claire were in this episode. For so much of what we've seen them on screen, we haven't been able to see this wonderful, warm, loving, tight mother-daughter relationship, which is a very special, sacred relationship. We've mm-hmm. always felt that Bree was connected, obviously, more to Frank. And even the fact that Claire leaves Bree kind of doesn't feel great, right? But mm-hmm. in this episode, with Claire really being there for Bree, like keeping Bree's secret when Bree's like, don't tell that it's Bonnet, Claire's kept it all the time. Granted, she's in trouble now with Jamie about that. But also Claire sitting down and saying, here are your choices. I'm going to support you and help you in anyway, right. And the fact that Claire even leaves Bree because Bree tells her, like, I know it's going to kill you to leave me right now, but I need you to do this. The mother-daughter connection was in this episode.
Right.
Huge. And I feel like I've been waiting for this for so, so long. And this is kind of how I felt in the book, too, that this is when I was like, gosh, these women love on each other. Mm. My bad. Bree needs to stop smacking everybody. Okay? Use your words, Bree. Use your words. Like, on one hand, I'm like, okay, you know, Jamie roughed her up, which, by the way, I felt very uncomfortable. I felt very uncomfortable reading that and very uncomfortable watching it. This is a newly pregnant person. Okay? And I feel like when people are newly pregnant and they know, they're like, oh, I can't lift up heavy things. I can't do the cat litter. I don't, like in yoga, you're not supposed to do the twisted ones. Okay? I just know that in yoga, they're like, do not do any twists.
Never mind the deli meats. Can't do deli meats.
No, and here's listeria. Jamie just flapping her all over the place. Not the best thing to do to a pregnant woman. Anyway, I'm just bad because there's so much family tension going on right now. I feel so awkward that I just want to sit outside with Murtaugh and be like, what's going on? Okay. And like, great. This is kind of a cop out to some, but it's not to me.
Okay.
And it's that great that it needs to happen again. Can I please go to Fraser's Ridge? Seriously, how hard is that?
Dork.
I really just want to go and feed Clarence and sit down at that table and pass around what looked like mashed potatoes. It was a very small bowl of mashed potatoes, by the way. I'm pretty sure I could eat that entire bowl of mashed potatoes that they were all sharing from.
That was your serving at Thanksgiving.
Oh my gosh, seriously, I love potatoes so much. But
whenever Mary's sick, I need potatoes.
Oh, that's it. That is my sick food, friend.
That's how I know. That's how I know Mary's really sick.
All
when she
I
wants
want is
mashed
potatoes.
Can you go to Boston, Mike? It for me and give me mashed potatoes. Nothing else.
Nope.
Just wants the potatoes.
Just want mashed potatoes.
So I had to get myself some dinner while I'm there too.
Bear McCreary's music, by the way, in this episode also gets to go in the great because I especially like the song that they play while they're having that family dinner.
Yes.
And I cannot wait for the soundtrack to come out. So yes, my great is still that I still would like to go to Fraser's Ridge. Okay, what's your GPG?
You're such a dork. It's okay.
It's,
and I love you because
that's
of
that's why I love this show. Yeah. I pretty much would just sit there eating their taters. Potatoes.
Good Lord of the Rings reference.
You're welcome.
There. You know, just nerd. Straight up nerd love. All right, my good.
What's a tater, precious?
Potatoes.
You can mash them. You can boil them. Oh, Samwise Gamgee.
Oh. you know.
Sorry. Continue.
Anyway, my good was the final scene with Roger at the Stones. I mean, is it cheesy that he just happens to make his way? Again, this is all things that are in the Outlander DNA, right? Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. he just happens to come upon this thing that happens to be in South Carolina, yep. that just happens to be featured at the beginning of this season, which, by the way, I still do appreciate. And as a show watcher, had I not had any of that context, I would have been like, really, dude? There's Stones tier two. Like, come on.
It's so good. So
I would have been upset. So I'm glad that we had that context at the beginning of this season.
Okay, because you weren't a fan of it.
No, I was a fan of it.
Oh, okay. A lot of people weren't a fan of it.
No, okay, I was. Because it was like, oh, cool. All right. Like, it reminded me of things like, okay, there are cultures and worlds that are thousands of miles apart. Thousands. Mm-hmm. Yet they're building pyramids at the same time.
How insane.
That wouldn't have had any contact with each other, right?
Yep.
You're having it in South America. You're having it in Egypt. You're having all these things. And there are countless other things that are like that, too. But they share something that in any other way, at that time, there's no form of communication whatsoever that they would be able to either run into each other or even understand each other, even if they did, right? So I love the notion that Outlander tackles the fact that these stones are built in North Carolina and also, you know, Scotland and even in Jamaica, apparently. But so is it cheesy? Sure. But the moment I heard that humming, it just created this Pavlovian response of like, oh my God. Like, I don't know what I remember hearing it being like, holy, you know, like, holy bleep, like, you can hear it. I can hear it. It makes you feel special almost. And in my opinion, this was Rick Rankin's best acting to date, when he's at the stones and you can feel his pain. And as he's looking at those two stones, the two rubies or whatever they are in his hand, just agonizing over what to do.
Yep.
How do I do this? Do I do this? Do I touch? Do I not? And it reminded me almost of the movie Seven.
Okay.
You remember Seven at the end? Spoiler alert. With
is that the Seven Sins?
Yes, with Brad Pitt. And he's
kind of grossed me out.
And he's like, and Morgan Freeman and Kevin Spacey are there, and Kevin Spacey is the killer, and they have the box at the end. He's and the tension that was there between the three men, and Brad Pitt's going, oh my God. What's in the box? That's what I felt like with Rick Rankin being like, oh, you know, and, you know, of course, in Seven, it ends up being Gwyneth Paltrow's head, which was Brad Pitt's wife. But there's no head in this one. But like that tension that that
you're just saying you were so tense.
Yeah. And when the episode acting went to was black, reminiscent of that.
Yes.
And the episode going to black, is that also a little cheesy? Kind of. But that is.
Oh, my God. But I loved it.
But the bad. The bad actually has to do with Roger again, but it's not his fault. It's actually the directing during this the chase scene with Roger.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the direction overall for season four has been very flat, save for like Denise DeNovi and Jennifer Getzinger.
Mm-hmm.
It's just been very basic and it's been very plain. There hasn't been much like very interesting stuff done.
Okay.
It's just like very camera A, camera B, you know, like, okay, and then we're going to have this random stock footage of North Carolina, and then we're going to transition to trees, and then we're going to go to direct. You know, so it just feels low budget to me.
I would agree.
You know, it just feels like what are we doing? And then
for book readers, I just need to put this out there. For book readers, there's like you guys know we're like looking for rhododendrons, and I swear to God, I feel like the art department just found like two bushes that kind of could pretend to be rhododendron bushes, but they're totally not, and they just stuck them there. And we're like, Roger, run near this and like duck near it because people are going to be looking for rhododendrons.
Right.
We don't have those here, but here's some bush that we found at AC Moore that kind of looks like it could be.
We went to Home Goods.
Yeah, we tried to find a rhododendron, couldn't. So here's this like one thing that has green leaves on it because it was so random. If you look at it, it's not like a forest full of these things.
And it really didn't hide him all that well. You're like, you're looking at the American Indian going, the Mohawk being like, dude, he's right there.
I really feel like they had this like forest of just plain old trees and they were like, shoot, we need a couple bushes.
Oh no, what'd we do? Scouting screwed this one up.
Let's go. Find some bushes.
Who's in charge of the scouting department?
So I agree with you. The running around scene, not the high point
no,
in the episode.
It felt so basic. And even like the slow-mo that like is interesting, it just doesn't really fit into the visual vocabulary of Outlander. It's not something that they do. This isn't a Zack Snyder film, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I just felt like I was just watching people jog through the woods.
Yeah.
That's what I felt like was happening. And there was nothing interesting about that chase. There was no first person. There was no, like, hectic camera. There was nothing. It was just, you know, still camera on tracks, just following people. And it was just boring, which is the problem because this should have been the most visceral part of the entire episode.
Your heart should have been the thumping.
You should have been pumping, dude. And I felt like it felt flat. But the great for me is you said that you love what they're doing and the love that Bree and Claire are sharing and how that makes you feel. And I don't deny that. But what I love truly about this episode was what they're doing with Jamie and Bree. They're having this divide between them and they have to start somewhere, right? They have to have this thing between them. It can't all just be sunshine and friggin' rainbows and unicorns, right?
No, that'd be nice, but no.
And I like that they're creating this family drama, but mixing in with complex, like, and the complex emotional pull and tug between a new father and a new daughter. And it's probably one of the most interesting things that the show has done in a while, where it's like you have this real emotional complexity between these two, and it's totally new ground. I really appreciate it. And I think they make some missteps in it, but we can get into that in a little bit.
All right.
But
you just want to like jump on
in? You take the lead on this one, baby.
Get off your knee, you idiot. That might be one of my favorite lines from this entire episode.
Goodness gracious. That was great.
Poor Ian.
By the way, I have a wicked, wicked, wicked good Outlandish theory of the week about Ian. I have wicked good Outlandish theory of the week.
Ian was present for so much of this episode and such a little doll.
There was like
such a doll.
There was an anti-by Ian moment in this episode where he's like, Murtaugh's like, okay, let's take a hike. And Bree says, no, he stays because he did something stupid too.
Hashtag no by Ian. You're right. And that's what's so great is we finally got to like flesh out this character who's just been kind of thrown around a little bit. I'm loving on Ian and I'm loving all of the feels that this poor boy had to go through. I mean, think of everything he's been through so far. Then he starts to get the hots for his cousin.
Oh,
awkward.
Don't you get like the heebie-jeebies?
I liked how Bree played it off. Like, oh, that's sweet. That's nice.
You're in the friend zone.
But that ain't gonna happen, honey. Ain't gonna happen.
Oh, you're cute.
And how bad he looked when he touched his necklace that you know he's been petting every night.
He's
like,
so
can't
proud
you picture
of it.
Roger every night wearing that necklace to bed going,
not Roger, Ian.
Ian sitting there going, I'm so badass. I'm so cool.
I sold a guy
and now I'm wearing this like really big necklace. Yeah, like, did any of you ever make a big purchase for like a watch or a necklace, or did you just love something? So like when puka shells are really big, I'll never forget when I got a hardcore choker puka necklace, and I remember wearing it being like, I am so cool right now. And I feel like that's how Roger feels, that he's like in 1996 wearing the coolest puka shell necklace, except it's not puka shell at all. But yeah, I just, when he was holding it being like, oh, I paid him with this, but it's okay, like his mixed feelings, like it's like his brain couldn't move as fast. He could have sat there and said, don't let the cat out of the bag,
her
handfast husband is worth this necklace. Instead say, don't worry, I have a map, or like, I have, you know, like, this is going to be the clue, this will help us know where to go. But his brain wasn't as fast as his mouth, and you just wanted to sit there and go, it's okay, honey, get off your knees, you idiot. It's okay.
I I vow to you that I would take your hand, be my honor to take your hand and shut up. Shut up.
He and Murta need new
go
hats.
Go get your shine box.
P.S. He and Murta need to go shopping in Wilmington for new hats. I think Auntie Note Jocasta, she's missing out because she can't see. If she could see Murta's hat, let's jump on that. Let's jump on that horse and buggy.
What are you talking about?
Murta taking Brie to Auntie Jocasta's.
I like that scene when they're trying to figure out what the heck to do. And, you know, obviously Brie has an expectation that her mother has to go. But who's going to take care of Brie? And I just love the fact that even though Murta was just kind of lurking this whole episode, he really wasn't doing anything until he just said, I'll take her. And again, this is why Outlander this season is I think this is probably the best season since season one, because this feeling of family, it just
so good.
And it just feels so good to have somebody like Murta. Like, everybody needs a Murta. Like, I just feel like that's kind of true in this season. But, you know, taking her to go see Auntie Jocasta, you know, I didn't have any, I'm not sure how you felt when you were reading the book, Mary, but I didn't have any gut feeling telling me that Auntie was going to be like, no, you can't come into my house. Like, I felt like instantly this wasn't going to be an issue.
No, yeah. I mean, family is everything, and in general, but family in this time is everything.
Right.
Scottish family. Hold up.
Yes.
Hold up.
But it's good. It's good to see River Run again because it's such a beautiful setting. Mm-hmm. And I knew that we were going to see Auntie again. And I got a feeling that we're going to have a little bit more to deal with. And here's one other thing, too. Here's a question that I have for you. Is Brianna going to be, like, normal at River Run? Because we already knew how Claire reacted at River Run.
Oh, is she going to be a modern day woman?
Yes.
Okay.
Because Brie, she ain't got any problem punching people and being like
wearing pants
and figuring stuff out and doing whatever.
I think Brie is going to have a pretty fun time sitting on like a nice couch. I mean, she's been sleeping in a little leaf shed. So,
yes, you're right.
You know, as a newly pregnant woman, Is she gonna have some tough times? Yes, but this is her baby moon. Okay, a lot of people nowadays they go on a cruise, maybe they go to a spa. She went to River Run. Okay, put your feet up, honey. Put your feet up. You don't need to wake up.
Go get yourself
and feed
a mani.
Clarence. That's what Mary Larson's for. Okay, go get yourself a spa day.
I wonder what's gonna come of River Run. And I wonder, again, like how Brie is going to react. I wonder if there's some more things that are going to be happening there that are, a little bit more conflict driven than I think we're all prepared for. Because I don't see them. Like, it's unfortunate that they have to split the family up again. Like, remember how we used to get so aggravated when they would split Jamie and Claire up, and you're like, oh my god, again?
Yes.
Like, come on. Like, I remember the end of season three in the finale when they were like, we're gonna get arrested, you know? Like,
yes.
Oh my god. And I don't feel like that for this, but I feel like it's unfortunate that we have to split the family up again.
I know. But that's what Bree's getting at, is that this sucks and she can't go because she's pregnant. Like, it is so unfortunate that they just got back together.
Right.
But because of Jamie's actions, this is now what he has to do. You know how you like that? You like when people's actions and, like, their choices and all this stuff?
Sure.
Because he made a dumb choice to just punch Roger's face in.
Left and right.
Yeah. Poor Roger. Props to the makeup department, by the way. Roger, ouch.
All the bruises.
Oh, my goodness. I love to see how they changed over time.
Yes, you know? That was good. That gave you a good indicator of time passing.
Yeah.
That was good.
But because Jamie did this, this is what we're now left with.
Yes. Well, you know, I want to dig into the whole Jamie thing, and I also want to dig into the overriding portion here a little bit, and why I felt like I was confused with Jamie. And I want to do that right after we talk about our sponsor real quick.
So Castle Massey, you guys have heard about them a lot on this show. It's because they're dedicated to quality and care. We talk about how amazing their products are because they're free of sulfates, phthalates, artificial additives, and they're cruelty-free, and they're proudly made right here in the United States. Well, in addition to their line of essential oils, they also offer a line of apothecary essentials. So Castle Massey offers a full line of brushes and combs for every type of hair, both stylers and detanglers. They have a manicure set, super healthy cuticle creams, which, guys, ladies, gents, if you're living somewhere where it's dry and cold, cuticle cream's going to be your best friend. And they actually have what is, in my opinion, the best nail filer of all time.
Ever. They five kilt nail filer.
They offer floral bath waters in rose, jasmine, and lavender, and that can be used as a toner or to lightly fragrance the skin or the linens. And of course, their Dr. Hunter's line, which features all of the original remedies. So the original apothecary company in America, Castle Massey, does apothecary right. And right now, they have their celebrated bath and body sale. You can find it, Castle Massey's Apothecary Essentials. They are marked down up to 33%. And because you love us and we love you and you're part of our clan, you get an additional 30% off your entire order. You just enter OutlanderCast at checkout. Pretty dang amazing, if you ask me.
Just because you're super awesome. You're wicked awesome.
You're wicked awesome, as we'd like to say.
So here's a couple of questions I have about Jamie. Yeah. And I'm not being negative. I just have questions.
Okay.
Is it bad for me to like be upset with Jamie and look down on him as a character for immediately jumping to the conclusion that Bree lied about being raped after she confronts him about after like beating the hell out of Raja? Is it bad of me? Because I feel like they're manufacturing this like debate, and I feel like they're manufacturing this conflict between the two.
Well, you know what stinks is he had just done that, like fake done that when he fought with her.
Right.
And so you're like, Jamie.
Which was a scene I liked, by the way.
Yes.
I know you were uncomfortable with it, but I liked it because you could see Jamie's wheels turning.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
But still, it was weird because it's like he's questioning her, but he's questioning her on purpose to prove a point to her. But it's like, Jamie, if you had any doubt, she would have cracked then. You already went through all this.
Sure.
You talked about being raped yourself. Like, you had some pretty severe talks. And then you're going to go and call your daughter a hussy and tell her that she's a liar? James Fraser, calm yourself down, you stubborn, hot-headed man.
Right. Right.
But so is Brianna. So, I mean, if nothing else, this episode showed that a lot of characteristics in the Fraser family are passed down.
And which is funny. I mean, because we have them talking about what they did talk about and about the rape and what they can or cannot do and what she could do to protect herself, and even the conversation about Blackjack Randall. Did you fight him? Mm-hmm. Did you, like, I love everything. Seriously, I love everything there is to love about Brianna and Jamie. I love the emotional complexity. I keep saying it, and I don't care. That complexity between the two is easily the best thing of season four so far.
For you, yes.
For me.
It is very, very beautiful.
Because it's so fertile. I keep wanting to go back to it to be like, I love the how uncomfortable it is, and them feeling each other out. But then, and they already have a natural conflict, right? The immediate natural conflict for them that works best is the fact that Bree has a father that she already loves. So when she says to him,
"That role is filled, my friend."
So when she says to him, "My father was a good man," and like this is the and like this what we played at the beginning of this episode is a microcosm of why this episode is so good. And why it doesn't work at sometimes, because we have this what I feel like to be a manufactured conflict between Jamie and Brianna about the whole thing of beating up Roger, and she's so mad at him, and even though he didn't know, and he, you know, tells her that she's a hussy, and she gets mad. You don't get to be more angry than me, but then she says to him, "My father was a good man. He never would have done that." And that look of like shame on Jamie's face, it was freaking so bad. Golden.
So bad. So good, but so bad. And, I'm itching. Yeah. I feel so awkward.
I mean, hold it.
Just like that. A winner.
It was freaking awesome. You're right. It made you itchy. It was that bad.
Yes. Truly. Look at me. I was just itching for reals.
And then, but then we have this other thing with Jamie that I'm confused about too.
Okay.
Because we have this moment where if Jamie as a character learns from his mistake and moves on and says, wow, I should not do stupid things like that again. Look where my vengeance, look where my rage, look where my stubbornness, and look where my insecurities got me, beating the snot out of Roger. My daughter hates me now, and she doesn't even want to consider me her father. Yet, now he tells Murta to go get Stephen Bonnet and keep it a secret.
I don't really like that part.
And go kill him or bring him so he can kill him, but I'm not going to talk to anybody about it.
Like, Jamie, haven't you learned secrets are no fun?
And here's another thing, too, that here's a question about. Jamie has this talk with Brianna about if you kill him, it doesn't make it any better. He's trying to tell her, you can do what you can do. And it's your choice. But then he immediately snatches that choice away from Brianna by saying, I'm going to kill Stephen Bonnet and nobody's going to know about it. Like,
because it's what he thought he did before. Well, he didn't think he killed him.
No, but...
But he thought he gave the rapist a big old beating.
And you're making my point.
I know.
Because he's not... It's the same freaking thing.
Listen,
you would think after this
Jamie
conversation...
He's human, okay? He's human. We all mess up sometimes. So I'm not saying that it's right, but what I'm saying is, yes, correct, Blake. There are people making not so great choices. The tough thing that Claire had to do was keep the secret of Bonnet from Jamie, okay? Ian, poor wee Ian, okay? He's just a little young kid. I feel really bad for him. We're just going to give him a get-out-of-jail-free pass. But Jamie, thinking he's doing the right thing for his family. I mean, for most of the time, he's fine. But lying to Claire.
Not good.
Saying that it was a tree that he punched or something.
Not great, Bob.
No, Jamie. But I'm not saying that this is out of character for Jamie.
I like what he's like. I didn't tell you. I just let you believe it. And he's like, Claire, come on. I've been there. I've done that. And that was...
Oh my
not
God.
Smart,
that
not smart,
fight,
Jamie.
That fight?
What? What
when
fight?
You didn't tell me about the man weekend?
Oh, yes.
Having the female bartender at man weekend?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, there was, this sounds.
I took care of that. I went Jamie Fraser.
She did
because I
Jamie
found
Fraser.
The bartender and I went, I heard you got to spend a weekend with my husband.
Well, it wasn't a weekend. Listen, all right, this sounds
so
really
bad. That's how it felt to me when I first found
this
out.
This sounds really
and
bad.
And I went all sorts of Jamie Fraser
this
on her.
This sounds really bad.
I didn't touch
and
her.
It is nowhere near as bad as Mary is making it right now. Like, she did. This woman did not spend a weekend with
didn't.
Me.
She came in like bartended.
She bartended
like
a party that my
party.
Friends and I had.
Yeah.
But the problem was, I didn't tell my wife about it. And this is when we were newly, brand new married.
And it was like a man only party.
Right. And nothing bad happened.
No.
Nope. It was just, it was a bartender that my friends and I were familiar with at a restaurant that we used to go to all the time.
Yeah.
And at the time,
all the guys made a pledge. Don't
we're not going to say anything.
Your girlfriends or wives.
Which is so stupid, right? And knowing it now.
See, I feel like you could sit down with Jamie right now and you
but
could
I,
be like,
here's
Jamie.
The thing. Yeah, I learned from my mistake.
Well, Jamie's going to learn from his mistake.
He didn't because he's already trying to kill Bonnet.
No, but you know, this is pretty much like the same day. He's going to have a nice long ride with Claire in a little bit. Episode 411, Claire's going to do what I did, which is come home in the middle of the night and say, you think you can lie to me?
I didn't lie.
do you think? And that's what he's going to say. I didn't lie. And you say,
Either way, what I learned, the most important lesson from that conversation was no matter what it is, you, my wife, are able to talk to me.
Yep.
And I am able to talk to you.
Yep.
No matter what it is.
Correct.
It doesn't matter. And
correct.
That was important. That was an important lesson. And that's what Jamie needs to learn with Claire.
Yes.
And that's what he needs to learn with Bree.
Yep.
And that's what Bree needs to learn too, because she's lying about a whole bunch of different other stuff. And I want to treat this this half of our show, kind of like a sandwich. Okay, we talked about some good stuff.
So I'm just you've given Jamie a break. Is that what you're trying to say?
Well, no, I want to continue with the bad stuff a little bit, and then I want to end with good stuff. Is that fair?
That's fair.
We're gonna go full Oreo method.
Okay. Yes.
So continue with some bad stuff and why I brought this down to a 4.6. And I said this to you as soon as the episode ended, and I told you not to tell me your take on it.
Okay.
But I felt like there was overwriting in this episode. The writer just overwrote. And by overwrote, I mean like it's like when you have a painting,
mm-hmm.
and you're doing the painting, you got the Mona Lisa, and you're like, oh, I just need to do one more little stroke. And that one little stroke is the worst thing that's ever happened to humanity, because...
Wait, what extra stroke on the Mona Lisa is the worst? I thought the Mona Lisa
is
all set.
It is all set, but I'm just saying, like, if you were Leonardo da Vinci...
You're confusing me.
And you were like, I'm going to do one more stroke. And you're like, you know, thank you very much.
Okay.
And it ruins it.
Okay.
And I'm not saying that Luke Skelhas ruined it, because he did a good job,
I feel like.
Like, you don't get to be angrier than me is a good line, one that I believe Brianna would say.
Agreed.
And that feels like a modern thing a woman of her age would say. And I can appreciate that. But I think he overwrites some things here, especially in this this conflict scene between the whole family. Like when Claire lays down the ring. And it's just a powerful moment.
Yes.
Where Jamie asks, okay, if it wasn't Roger, then who was it? Bree nods at Claire, doesn't say anything, just nods at her. Claire looks at Jamie, pulls it out, puts it down on the table, and says, it was him. Like, no.
See, no, but you say overwriting, but I would have said that. I would have taken it off and
No, absolutely not. You would have just taken the ring off
and
put it on the freaking table and would have walked away.
With my hands up. Like the what hands?
That's exactly what would have happened. And that was a perfectly dramatic moment that just... lay it down there on the table. That would have been awesome.
Yep.
And to see that moment of realization on Jamie's face, the whole thing, it would have been great. But it was overwritten. The second thing, too, was when Bree says to Jamie, my father was a good man.
Oh.
He never would have said what you just
said.
And then all of a sudden she says, and you're just a savage. Like, oh.
Choice word.
No.
Choice word. Seeing as how an episode is called Savages.
Right, and I know it's a callback to Savages, and it's in the time and whatever, and she's probably heard it a million times because she's been at Fraser's Ridge.
Mm-hmm.
I get it, but what do we do? Just let that immediate, awesome conflict between fathers, just let that be.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
I do.
And then when they're about to leave each other, Bree says, I thought he left me, Mama, but he didn't. He came back for me. And like, Claire is asking, what do you want me to do when you see him?
Yeah.
And she has this moment, Bree has this moment of saying, just tell him everything. But then she follows it up with, I thought he left me, Mama, but he didn't. He came back to me.
It's fine. Like, it's fine.
What?
Okay, so enough with your negative Nancy. Let's get back to the great things.
But the things, now we're moving on to the Oreo, okay?
Yes.
We're continuing with the Oreo. There's some great stuff here with Bree and Claire, like you said, and I want your opinion on it, Mary. Especially the first one that comes to my mind that I absolutely adore is the moment when Claire and Bree are talking about the mechanics of time travel.
Yep.
And she's like, I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Please tell me your thoughts on this scene.
I loved it because it's so true. Like, it's not like people have gone through the stones holding hands. Mm-hmm. You know, when Claire says, what if you end up in different places?
Oh, my God. Or what if the baby just drops to the ground?
Yes.
Like, real choices.
And like, you know, they talk about it being not such a nice trip. That it's excruciating and scary and crazy, and what that would be like for a baby.
Right. And in compounding that with the idea of you need to make a choice
now.
And either you have an abortion, which
I'm willing to help you out.
But it's like scary and not safe, and we don't really know if it's like, I mean, it's going to work, but like things are going to be a little crazy.
But it's phenomenal writing in this part, and not only is it phenomenal writing in this part, the acting is even better. What did you think of Sophie Skelton? I know we've been back and forth on Sophie. What did you think?
Oh my gosh, back and forth as of this season. Seriously, Sophie Skelton has hit it out of the ballpark. She has taken her character to a new level. I'm feeling Brie. I'm feeling it, and I'm believing her frustration and her loss and her grief. She is pregnant. She doesn't know who it is. She was just raped. She's just traveled through time to prevent her parents from dying in a fire that they don't even know when it's going to happen. The love of her life follows her, even though she doesn't really think that's a good idea for him to follow her. And now she's lost him, and he's gone to the Mohawks, who are not really nice. I feel like that's one thing they didn't really talk about in this episode. So the Cherokee, cool man, bear killer, we got you, boo. Like, let's hang out. Let's trade. Mm-hmm. Mohawks don't play nice, okay?
Yeah.
The Mohawks, fierce. Like, yeah. They should have been a bit more scared. And hopefully we'll be getting that next episode, that this is not the posse that you want to be going after to ask for your person back.
I like the fact that we had choices in this episode, and each choice... Both had great things, both had bad things, and the characters were forced to choose in meaningful ways that will forever alter the plot, and in ways that bring things out in them that wouldn't normally happen.
Mm-hmm.
That's when you know you're doing right things when it comes to the writing. But another right thing will be the Outlander cast staff thought of the week. You ready for this?
Oh, of course I am.
This one comes by the way of my soul sister.
Hey, sister, soul sister.
Donna Antaramian. Donna, awesome. Take it away.
Hi, this is Donna Antaramian, one of your clan moderators. After last week's episode, life seems idyllic on the ridge. We get this beautiful moment between a father and a daughter. For Brie, she still blames herself for allowing Bonnet to rape her. She should have fought harder. Jamie, knowing just words won't convince her otherwise, baits her to prove fighting a man like Bonnet would only get her killed. And who would know better than Jamie? After all, he did not fight, but he did what he had to for Claire to survive. This tranquil sweating setting is soon erupted by a disturbance, for Brie is a force to be reckoned with as she storms into a blissful family breakfast. Heaven to Murtaugh. Exit stage left. The core of this episode is about secrets, assumptions, and five people that just did not communicate with each other. But who was to blame? Is it Lizzie for assuming Roger raped Brianna? Is it Claire for being protective of her daughter and not truthful to Jamie? Is it Jamie for not even asking Roger his name? Is it Wee Ian for being the obedient nephew and selling Roger to the Indians? Or is it Brie herself for not being upfront with her parents? In the 14 years that I've been reading this series, I have yet to answer that question myself, for I believe each has added a log to build this fire. Finally, we come to Roger, who is at a crossroads himself. He has escaped and found more stones. Does he save himself, or does he go back to Brie?
Atta girl, Donna.
Thank you, Donna.
Way to be, girlfriend. Way to be. I love the Outlander cast staff thought of the week because mainly it gives people another perspective. And nobody gets to listen to me talk anymore. So that's a good thing.
That's a good thing. I love you dearly.
The problem, though, is that it's followed up by the Outlandish Theory of the Week. And we want to let you know that this Outlandish Theory of the Week is brought to you by Care Of. Now, you've heard me talk about Care Of before. It's the personalized vitamins that you can get sent directly to your house. And if you want to take advantage of this month's special New Year offer, for 50% off your first month of personalized Care Of vitamins, go to takecareof.com and enter OutlanderCast50 at checkout. All right. And it's a new year. It's new health goals for everybody. Do your health some good in 2019.
Do it some good.
Go get yourself some vitamins, man. And it's easy. It's great. It can boost your energy levels. It can help you sleep. It can take care of your stress. I know I took my own quiz. They make you take a quiz.
Yes.
It takes like 5 minutes.
Okay.
And ask you, what do you want to work on? You want to work on your sleep? Great. You want to work on your stress? Fantastic. You want to work on your metabolic health? Boom. We'll take care of you.
Boom.
Right? So you take this quiz. It takes 5 minutes. Do you know like 90% of the people fall short of the recommended guidelines for vitamins?
I would believe it.
I'm absolutely one of those 90%.
Yeah.
Until I got to Care Of. So it's really easy to be there. It gets delivered right to your door. And it even feels good for people out there that are vegans and vegetarians because they can do stuff that'll match your requirements that
awesome.
You live by. And they even got like the prenatal vitamins for people that are pregnant. So hey. It feels good.
Everything's covered.
But no, it's not as good as my Outlandish theory. Okay. Are you ready? Actually, I got two of them
yes.
for you. All right, let's do it.
Okay, so what you got?
All right, so I got a low-hanging fruit one. Okay, this is entry-level Outlandish theory of the week stuff.
Okay.
Okay? The first one, Murta and Ati, totally gonna knock boots.
What?
Totally gonna hook up. Totally gonna be together. It's absolutely going to happen.
Oh, my gosh. She was like, I recognize these hands. And I was like, whoa.
And you just see like a twinkle in his eye,
whoa.
Man. Like, you see the sparks flying.
Yeah.
I really feel like that's what's going to happen. That's what's going to lead down to. I actually feared for Murta's life in this season. And if they hook up, if they become a thing and Ati becomes a thing,
okay.
I don't think he's going to die at the end of the season. I was on that trend of Murta not being around by the end of season four.
Okay.
But I got a feeling
exactly.
he might be sticking around.
I hope. I need Murta in my life.
I absolutely thought that he was going to die.
Yeah.
Okay, but here's, we're graduating to master's level, okay? The nerds down the hall have been working on this
Bring
one.
It.
Okay. Master's level Outlandish Theory of the Week stuff. Okay, so Ian has this moment of being like, I vow to marry you. And he's so easily and willing able to like give himself up.
He's such a puddin'.
I know. And it gets to the point where he even says, listen, the Mohawk are like fierce and they don't mess around, but they adopt people into their tribe, like, and when they do, they become equals, and like they're loyal to those people.
Okay.
I know Roger's at the Stones, but I don't think that he goes through. I've been going back and forth. The nerds and I have been going back and forth on this one. Okay, and we came to the conclusion that Roger does not go through. Like, it would be nice for him to go.
No,
and, like,
I want him to go and have a little
like
spa.
Get a shower.
Like, he needs to pretty much get a spa day.
Yeah, have a mani.
You know, like
maybe a pedi.
Oh my God! Totally in the future, you know that there's some beautiful resort with that gorgeous looking of the one rhododendron bush, and they'll say it looks like you need a facial.
Yes, you need so much facialing right
maybe
now.
Maybe like a little honey facial.
Maybe you can get the sugar mask.
Yeah, let's do that for a little bit, rejuvenate you.
Yes,
and then send you back.
Maybe he can do like the vampire method.
No,
nope. Like already
stop.
Get the blood out.
Nope.
Get the old
stop.
Blood out. No,
nope.
Nothing.
All set with blood.
Okay, well, I don't think he's doing that.
Okay, you don't think he goes to the spa?
I don't, because I feel like he's got two stones. Yes, he could go and then come back.
Yes,
and it makes sense. But I feel like he's got two stones, one for him, one for Bree, to get the heck out of Dodge.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so he's gonna go back. But before he realizes he can go back, he's going to get either caught or he's going to willingly go back to the Mohawk because he doesn't know where he is and he's going to get screwed up.
Poor thing.
And they're going to adopt him into his tribe.
Okay.
But I bring up Ian beforehand because Jamie and Ian and Claire are on the way to find Roger.
Yes.
And it's for certain, in my opinion, that they're going to find him. And he's going to be part of the tribe, if you will, that Roger. And Ian is going to do the same exact stupid thing that he tried to do with Bree. Because he's going to feel so bad for his part and getting Roger beat up.
He didn't do anything wrong. Let's be real. He just listened to his uncle.
And that's what I'm saying. He's going to feel bad for that because Bree gave him a pop.
Poor Puddin. He
and,
has a bloody
and he's
going to
say, I'm going to volunteer myself to replace Roger. Like, I guarantee you. Like, that's the most... That is the most,
you know,
soap opera thing I could think
that's
of.
That's the ultimate buy, Ian.
That's the wicked buy, Ian. That's the worst buy, Ian, I could ever think.
I don't know how I feel about that.
I don't know. I feel like that's what's going to happen because, like, I just don't see it going down any other road. I just don't. Because how they need to get Roger back. Roger is much more important to the story than freaking Ian is. Nobody can. He's so irrelevant that they kick him out of every episode.
Bye, Ian. Bye, Ian.
So
what about Lizzie?
What about Lizzie?
Lizzie's hankering for a hunk of Ian.
Yeah,
he's handsome.
Lizzie's just as irrelevant as Ian.
Stop.
She is. She's a nothing character.
These little doe-eyed dumplings.
That is my Ellen's theory.
Well, you're breaking my heart.
Am I getting an interesting or an
sure,
interesting?
Sure, you can get an interesting because I hate it.
Bonnie Prince Chuck, what do you got?
Mock me.
Please hang up and try again.
All right, let's talk about these giveaways.
Okay.
All right, the giveaways that we always have at the
I'm
end
like
of
so
every...
I'm so saddened and disgusted by yours. Continue.
The giveaways that we have at the end of every episode of Outlander Cast, they're actually two of the same exact thing, which is the Apothecary Sampler, the Bath Waters kit from Caswell Massey. It is a $32 value. You can find one of the giveaways at OutlanderCastClanGiveaway.com. And then you can find the other giveaway at OutlanderCastClan.com.
Okay.
Okay. So they are both the Apothecary Sampler, Bath Waters Kit from Caswell, Massey Marvin.
Yes.
Final thoughts on this episode
in
general.
Such a good one to rewatch. And the music in this one, fantastic.
Yes. And for myself,
yeah.
I find it... very interesting that there are many familiar beats.
Agreed.
Ones that kind of make this episode great and make this episode kind of eh.
Okay.
And like, I love the fact that they're just living life and like, and it just feels great to see family be family. But what they've done is that they just have montages and they play the same song over the montages and everybody's happy and like it comes
within
That's
my favorite part, Blake.
I know, but it comes within the first 15 minutes of the episode and everything's happy-go-lucky and then all of a sudden things go to crap. It happened the last episode. It happened this episode. It happened in the episode with Claire and Air Mueller where she was feeding all the goats and everything. Montage. Jamie building the house. Montage. It's like... I don't know. Like, I would have loved to have seen that dinner that they were all having again, where Jamie is like giving the plate to Bree and he pulls it away from
potatoes?
Her.
Oh, okay.
You know,
yeah,
and like,
yeah.
It just have that dinner. Like, that would have been nice.
Yes, I understand.
And then also, we are now in the final act of season 4. We are in the third act.
The final countdown. We're here, my friends.
We are in the final act. This is the beginning, and it's not a coincidence that in this episode, you have episode 10, 11, 12, and 13. It's the final four episodes, the final act.
Yep.
It's not a coincidence that the final act begins with the family splitting apart and going their separate ways, which I find is interesting.
Yes.
So that is that. All right, you ready to close it out?
That I am.
Let's do it.
Switch things up this week, and I'm first going to thank our patrons, OutlanderCastClan.com members. You know who you are. You are amazing, and you help make OutlanderCast possible. Whatever level you're at, know that it is so incredibly generous and so kind of you, and we thank you all. We especially want to thank our associate producers, Angie, Carolyn, Celine, Cheryl, Dawn, Diane, Heather, Jennifer, Larissa, Lauren, Linda, Marilyn, Mary, Michelle, Patricia, Siobhan, and Summer. We also want to thank our co-producers, Barbara, Carolyn, Christina, Dana, Dieta, Janet, Jenny, Keelan, Kirsty, Lisa, Liz, Marianne, Meredith, Rainel, Rita, Sharon, Sue, Tara, and Tina. And then last but not least, our executive producers, Anne, Bobby, Jen, Katie, Martha, Peg, and Sarah. Thank you, and thank you to all of the members of our Patreon community at OutlanderCastClan.com. You guys rock.
You make it work, baby. It work. And you know what else makes it work for us?
What?
All the people that can recommend us and tell us, well, tell their friends about us and help grow the podcast. And the most important thing you can do is just tell a friend.
Tell a friend.
Tell a friend that we're here and be like, listen, I just listened to this amazing episode where they talked about Oreos and cauliflower last episode.
Stop the cauliflower.
And and be like, here, just listen to this. This was my favorite episode of Outlander.
Some people don't
know
how to listen to podcasts. Right. So you might have to show them where their podcast app is. It might just show them how to download it. But once they're there, they won't stop. Well, we want to thank D. Louise on iTunes, who wrote a review saying that Outlander cast is thoughtful, engaging, relatable married couple who enjoy Outlander but don't pull any punches in their reviews. I enjoy Blake's non-book reader approach to his commentary as well as his technical insight into the production. Mary is like my sister from another mother who has read the books and provides great insight herself and counterpoints to Blake's reviews. Blake's outlandish theories of the week are always entertaining, and I appreciate the time they take with their separate listener feedback show. Overall, thank great you. Podcast. Well, thank you so much, D. Louise. And thank you to everyone who's taken the time to write us a review in your podcast.
Well, D. Louise, you're welcome for the smoke.